My guest at this time is Larry Haas. He served as communications director for Vice President Al Gore, and he is now a senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council. He has joined us many times to talk about Middle Eastern affairs, especially as it relates to the Iran nuclear threat and how this administration and previous administrations have confronted that. And now we want to get his analysis of perhaps a significant breakthrough in general Mideast relations, but certainly it suggests an even greater thaw between Saudi Arabia and Israel as they look to confront a soon-to-be nuclear Iran, if they're not nuclear already. And Larry, thanks so much for being with us.
Nice to be here, Greg.
Well, one of the things whenever we talk about the Middle East peace process is the major stumbling block about the Palestinian or the Arab refusal to acknowledge Israel's right to exist. And while I don't know that it's official policy, what the Saudi Arabian Crown Prince has said recently suggests that we might be moving towards some hope in the region. This is courtesy of Reuters, but it's summarizing an article and an interview that appeared in The Atlantic. Saudi Arabia's crown prince said Israelis are entitled to live peacefully on their own land in an interview published Monday in the U.S. magazine The Atlantic, another public sign of ties between the two countries appearing to grow closer. Asked if he believes the Jewish people have a right to a nation state in at least part of their ancestral homeland, the crown prince Mohammed bin Salman Al Saud was quoted as saying, quote, "I believe the Palestinians and the Israelis have the right to have their own land, but we have to have a peace agreement to assure the stability for everyone and to have normal relations." Now, the details obviously could be very, very different. For example, he thinks that it should be pre-1967 borders, which I'm guessing Israel's not going to have much interest in. But Larry, when you look at kind of the moderation, at least in some areas, towards women in Saudi Arabia, the allowing of an Israeli flight in Saudi airspace, and now this public comment, what's your sense on what we're seeing from Saudi Arabia and how significant it really is?
Well, I would say two things. First of all, along with the other activities that you mentioned, this is part of a gradual warming of relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia that really has taken place over the course of the last 5 to 10 years. Lots of back channel communication, appearances by Saudi officials and Israeli officials at the same events. I believe there was even a handshake at one point. So we do need to put this in a larger and very positive context. I would say, however, that this statement is potentially monumentally important. It is, in essence, a recognition of the right of the Israeli state to exist. And this is something that goes back to really Arab refusals to recognize the state of Israel back to really 1948 and the creation of the state. We've had peace deals with Egypt and we've had peace deals with Jordan between those two countries and Israel. But Saudi Arabia has, you know, been particularly important as an outlier. And if this leads to a more formal recognition and peace deal between those two countries, this could have really tremendous effects that stretch across the entire region. So I think it's terribly important.
Is this thawing of relations entirely based on the shared threat from a nuclear Iran, or is it more than that, do you think?
There's no question that that's the overwhelming driver for Saudi Arabia. Now, I do believe that the Crown Prince wants to modernize Saudi society in a more general sense, have a more tolerant form of Islam as opposed to the radical Wahhabi Islam that the state has, not only propagated internally, but around the world over the course of decades. So there is a larger piece here. On the other hand, I don't think there's any question that, in the Middle East, as in many places in the world, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And Israel and Saudi Arabia probably have the most to lose when it comes to the rise of Iran. Israel, obviously, because Iran has called for its you know, destruction and is moving towards a nuclear capacity without any question. And Saudi Arabia, because it is the leading Sunni power in the region, and as a result, the leading enemy on the Islamic side of Iran, which is the leading Shia power. So in that sense, when you look at just strict geopolitical interests, it's not that surprising. If you set aside religion, it's not that surprising that you'd see Saudi Arabia and Israel getting closer and closer to one another to find a way to, you know, confront the threat of a rising Iran.
If you set aside the religion, that's a pretty big if, obviously, in that region. So what does it say to the rest of the region that Saudi Arabia, which, of course, is home to some of the most prized, you know, that has Mecca and Medina and so forth, so some of the founding areas of Islam, if they, in fact, move even further down this line, what kind of influence could that have on the rest of the region?
Well, look, Saudi Arabia, you know, for decades has been an extremely influential power across that region. If you look at the nations of that region, you'd have to say that the three most influential are probably the three that we've already mentioned in this conversation: Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Iran, and they're influential, you know, in different ways. And, you know, you might want to bring Turkey into that as well, depending on what we mean when we talk about the region. But there's no question that Saudi Arabia is a terribly important and central player, and one that has influenced far beyond its borders. It is the head of the, you know, the GCC, which is a group of six that also has come together to confront Iran. So it would be a pretty important signal to other countries that don't have relations with Israel that, you know, at the end of the day, this is a long-running dispute we've had with Israel. Israel isn't going anywhere. We've got bigger problems, and maybe the rest of you need to get on board. I don't know that other countries would, you know, move very quickly in the Saudi direction if Saudi Arabia continues to move down this line. But, you know, having said that, you know, it's a very important power in the region, and I would think that it would at least make other governments think twice about their longstanding, you know, refusal to deal with the Jewish state.
What can Israel and Saudi Arabia accomplish together in confronting Iran that they perhaps couldn't if they confronted them separately?
They can rally other countries to their side in formal relationships, military and diplomatic relationships, to confront Iran and make Iran a little bit more isolated than it otherwise would be. They obviously can share intelligence behind the scenes. Perhaps they can work together on, you know, whether it's cyber warfare or other measures to try to slow down the Iran nuclear development, the Iran development of its ballistic missiles. Perhaps they can find ways of patrolling the waters outside of the region that will contain Iran more. So all sorts of creative ways to confront Iran militarily, isolate it diplomatically, and, you know, just give Iran less flexibility in terms of what it's trying to accomplish in terms of destroying the Jewish state and achieving what it really wants, which is hegemony in the region. And Saudi Arabia has most to lose from something like that.
Despite the optimism we might see in a story like this, Larry, we're obviously pretty far away from any sort of formal deal like we saw with between Israel and Jordan or Israel and Egypt. Nonetheless, whenever those things tend to happen, there are certainly elements in those countries that don't like it. You think of Anwar Sadat, you think of Yitzhak Rabin. Given how much change this crown prince is trying to push in Saudi Arabia and beyond, how much resistance do you think he's perhaps facing back home?
Anytime you're in a conversation about what the crown prince is doing in Saudi Arabia and how significant it may or may not be, you don't have to be speaking very long before someone says, if he survives. The threat being that, you know, he will suffer the same fate, perhaps, as Anwar Sadat, who was assassinated by radical forces within his own country after making peace with Israel. So there's always, you know, that question, you know, what will, you know, the Saudi people and what will other Saudi forces within the government tolerate? So, you know, he's moving pretty aggressively, and you do have to wonder how much, you know, how successful he will continue to be as he, you know, pushes the envelope more and more. So we'll just have to see. But people do worry about his fate.
Well, we'll certainly be watching this story. It doesn't get a lot of headlines day to day, but some major developments over the past few months. Larry, thanks very much for your time today.
Nice to be here. Thanks for calling.
Larry Haas, a former communications director for Vice President Al Gore. He is now a senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.